Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Ginny Urich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside. And back with us today for a second time, the lovely Rachel Marie Kong. Welcome.
I'm so glad to be here with you, Jenny.
I'm so glad you're here. We talked last time about your book, just about being an artist and being interested in creative things. Actually, yesterday I just talked to a man who was in his 70s, and he said that your creativity is very closely linked to like your psychological health. I was like, oh, wow. He said, you know, even as you get older, it's really important to be working on your creativity. And I think in a world like this, it's hard. I get discouraged because I'm like, well, the computer can just do it. Do you feel like that sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand. And then it's even harder too when you're seeing that for your children, right? And you're wanting to cultivate for them that same opportunity to dig into the creative process and do it themselves. So it's like a double whammy of like trying to hold on to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tricky. So Let There Be Art was your first book that we talked about. And I loved it. I loved that you included so much in there about music. I remember it was such an encouraging book to me. And then also a lot in there about even entrepreneurship as an art.
Yeah.
And that's something good to think about too, because a lot of people are entrepreneurs now, or their kids will be. So just highly recommend Let There Be Art. And then you're also the founder of the Fallow House. You're just a big writer. Christianity Today, Proverbs 31, one I can't pronounce, Ecstasis?
Ecstasis. I know, it's so hard.
It's really off.
I had to learn it. So you make sure you say stay, Ecstasis.
Maybe I should cut that out.
They're by Christianity Today too. Yeah, we can fix that. You can give it another go.
She reads Truth and Courage. A writer for a long time, and you help a lot of people with their writing. It's real beautiful. So you had a new book that just came out.
I do.
And they're both just gorgeous books and meaningful and fairly different from each other. So first one is Let There Be Art. And this one is called, which is such a title. I wondered if you had this title in your heart for a long time, The Matter of Little Losses.
Do you want to hear a story about the title?
Yeah, I do.
So the first part came to me, Little Losses, and that was it. I was like, this is the angle. This is what I want to focus on. Little Losses. There's alliteration. It's perfect. And then, of course, you know, the book writing process is collaborative and you're working with your editors, right? And so my editor, you know, we need more. We need, that's not enough, Little Losses. And so we were working through some ideas, and one that my editor had was The Matter of Little Losses. And I remember at a glance, I was like, what is that? Like, come on. And then it grew on me, Jenny. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is perfect, because sort of like Let There Be Art, I had like all these different plays on that title that I, you know, these different things that you could think about. And then the same was true with The Matter of Little Losses. It was this play on the word matter and the idea that these little losses, they matter. But then it was really cool because it kind of worked out with the way that I introduced this book, where I say grief undulates, it can't be quantified. And so this idea of like trying to make sense of the matter of your losses, what physically, spiritually, what makes them up, you know, scientifically, like how do you define what makes that? And so I had kind of like fun getting into that and trying to sound like a scientist and really cool and, you know.
I love it. For me, it drew me in because when I really do think about motherhood, and I don't feel like I felt like this up until I became a mom, but when I think about motherhood, I feel like the entire thing is a matter of little losses.
Oh, yeah.
Because so much of my mothering experience has been having expectations that I haven't met for one reason or the other. And it's just this constant letting go of, oh, I wanted the birthday party to be like that. Oh, I wish that my room was cleaner. I wish I was better with helping my kids with chores. And, you know, here I talk to a lot of different people and they have so many different ideas of cool things that you can be doing with your kids. And like, oh, I didn't do that. And so it's just sort of this constant, it's that. And then it's also the little losses of they're growing up. And
yeah.
So then certain stages come and go. And I just heard this quote the other day that said something like the stages of motherhood, or this, even the stages of childhood, don't last forever. you know, it's like an amazing thing, but also a heartbreaking thing at the same time.
Yeah.
So I just really was drawn in by this concept, The Matter of Little Losses. The subtitle is Finding Grace to Grieve the Big and Small Things. And I love that you give permission to the reader and you give a voice to that. Like, it is a little grieving, you know, like, you know, friendships lost and you have money problems and you can't do what you'd hoped. And you know, you only have one chance. It's one life. And so sometimes we don't talk about those things because other people are grieving way bigger things.
Right.
And so it doesn't really seem like the right thing to talk about. But I was really drawn to it because I do feel like that's how my mothering has been. It's just a letting go of thing after thing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful book, just like your other one. It's filled with poetry and stories. And what's really cool for the sake of this podcast is that you have all of these flower metaphors. So many of them, I was blown away. Can you talk about that piece? Where did that piece come from?
Yeah, sure. So when we finalized the idea for this book, the fact that I would be delving into the topic of grief, I knew right away that I didn't want to shy away from what is hard about grief. I wanted to be very raw in my exploration and expression and even descriptions that I use. You know, in a later chapter, I actually talk about death as well. And I don't shy away from what is raw about a person dying and what that entails for our bodies and our experience in watching someone that we love pass. I knew right away, right off the bat, that this was going to explore heavy and dark matter. And so for that reason, I also thought I need something to counterbalance this. I need a way for there to be levity without offering trite expressions that kind of wash over all of this hard work that I'm trying to unearth. I need something that's going to complement what is hard about this book. And immediately I thought flowers. I thought flowers are beautiful and they have always been offered up in light of loss. And how fitting would it be for this book to essentially embody the experience that you have, say, when you go to a funeral. You are, you know, at a funeral, you're at a memorial service, you're experiencing a moment that is just raw with emotion, heavy and hard emotion. And what do you always have? You always have flowers. You always have something beautiful, meaningful. And then I also have to say, I talk about this later in the book, but I absolutely love the work of Shakespeare. I studied that particularly in high school. And I've always been drawn to Hamlet, the work of Hamlet, or the play Hamlet, and specifically for the character of Ophelia. And I've always loved her speech in which she, it's, you know, her floral speech where she kind of names a lot of these losses and tensions and regrets and these accusations, which are very much true. She names them all by listing off different flowers that have meanings. And in a sense, she is expressing how she truly feels, but yet she's hiding how she truly feels. And I always just, that speech always resonated with me, the idea of speaking how you're feeling and using a flower to name a precise pain while also sort of protecting yourself. That's what she does essentially. And so I just thought, wow, she is such a character that knows grief, that has lived it, that carries it, that has that struggle of, I want to express this, I want to say this, but I can't. And so she definitely was a really big inspiration in terms of, I want to think about her, think about how we all feel when it comes to our grief, and use flowers that have specific meanings to kind of guide and anchor this book along the way.
It's beautiful, Rachel. And I love, when I was growing up, my mom would always ask me, she would like quiz me on the flowers. It was a thing that we did. And I never knew the answer because I didn't care. She would be like, what's that one? I'd be like, I don't know, sunflower. Like, that's the only one I know.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I'm getting it wrong. I was just like, a pansy. It's a whatever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until I was in my 30s that I started to grow flowers and fell in love. And what I love about your book is that there really are so many different kinds of flowers. And of course, you know, we need them for pollinators and things, but there certainly could be just like one type of flour, but there are so many different types. We were sorting seeds for a food pantry recently. Someone had donated a ton of seed packets and they just needed to be sorted. I think everyone was like, I had no idea that there was this much variety.
Mm-hmm.
That's similar to our grief too. I think it's so personal often and so different. And that's the topic of the book, Big and Little Losses. And it looks different for every single person from family to family.
Sure.
And so I thought that your metaphor there of flowers fits so well with that because it's all unique and it all looks different.
Yeah.
This is a way really to help us to remember, I think, too. And then when you're out and about and you see these flowers, it can help you remember some of these different topics. But one of your biggest things and parts of your story is your brother. You talk about him in several different spots in the book. And you talk about the daffodil for love and also the edelweiss for dreams. And I just thought both of those were so impactful and so thought-provoking, and they tied a lot together. Can we start with the dreams one? Because I think this is sometimes something that a lot of people go through is they have these big dreams. You see your future spinning before you and your nanny quits and you watch your dream wash down the gutter. You stayed. Can you tell us a little bit of that story?
Yeah, sure. So this is my older brother. There's three boys in my family and then I'm the only girl. And so I'm the second oldest. But all my life had felt like the oldest because my true older brother lives with permanent brain damage as a result of an injury, a medical injury. And so, yeah, there was a season in my life where I had just graduated from college. I had all these dreams in my heart, the future ahead of me. And I returned home for a season before I intended to kind of launch into my dream. I was going to live in the city. I'm from New York. And so the dream was to go into publishing, and where, you know, the hot spot for that is New York City. I was going to go work in the city. And here I am, my brother's nanny of many years, just she leaves, she quits. It's just time to go. And so I was put in this position, not because anyone put this on me, but I personally was faced with this choice of, do I stay home and tend to my family? And, you know, perhaps there will be some good that comes of this, not only for the ones I'm taking care of, but for myself, you know, go down that path or chase down my dreams. And I chose to stay. I chose to stay home. And it was so very hard. It is not pretty when you put down a dream for any reason, especially when it's not something that you were planning on doing. But also, and that's the thing about this book, it's like there's a lot of and also, it's like there are these two sides of the coin always. What's hard, what's good, what's beautiful, what's raw and ugly, right? And it's like we're always holding that tension. And so here I am in this season where I've laid down this dream. I have no idea what's going to happen to my future and my dreams for writing and publishing. And yet, Ginny, I entered the most magical season with my brother, taking care of him. He is my older brother, but because of his injury, his permanent brain damage, he lives as though he's 3 years old. You know, he reads books all day. He loves cartoons. He sings a children's nursery rhymes, you know, that's just where he's at. And so I ended up entering this really magical undoing kind of a season where I began to notice the little things and slowed down in my life and really was kind of launched into this time of cultivating compassion, a deep compassion. That's ultimately what I get to in that chapter is, you know, a moment where I'm taking care of him. And for the first time, I have this moment where I consider not just what's broken in my life, but what's broken and possibly aching in his life. And that moment wrecked me. And it also changed the trajectory of, I guess, the formation of my character and what mattered to me. So, yeah.
I'm going to try not to cry through this one. I think I cried in the last one. Did I cry? I probably did.
Oh, the tears.
This paragraph is so moving. Dreams die. They're such a good writer. Dreams die, fold up, and all together fall out of the sky. I'm sure like people are listening right now. Like everyone has this. They have dreams of what they thought their life would be or where they thought they'd go or how things would have played out. Mm. They fall out of the sky. They are ripped right out from our rib cage, taken from the hollow of our hand. We lose dreams and we lay them down. And here's the question. And I want to know if, without a shadow of doubt, there is honor in laying down our dreams for the sake of our loved ones. I want to know if there can be any good in walking away from a dream. I want to know what becomes of the path paved before us as we make decisions in regard to our dreams. Is it all haphazard or will it work out anyway? Hmm. What's the answer?
Yeah. Oh gosh, I have to echo what I said earlier, is it's that tension of the both, right?
Yeah, you say dreams die, but they matter.
They matter.
That's the tension of the both.
That's the tension. I had a conversation with my mom about this chapter because this is probably the one that hit her the most, because she will forever be my brother's caregiver, and she is forever laying down dreams in order to take care of him and to be there for him, right? And so she knows this chapter. She's lived this chapter and she's still living it to this day. And we were just talking about how that tension of it is not pretty. It is not a good feeling to lay down a dream, to put something down. And yet at the same time, to be in a place where you are able to tend to, for whatever reason, you know, for those listening, it might not be that you are needed to take care of something. It could be something completely different. Maybe it's your health, right? Maybe it's your health that's preventing you from doing the thing that you love. And so you've had to change. And I talk about this in Let There Be Art as well. You've had to change. You've had to shift gears, right? That's where I think this book is so powerful, in that it doesn't gloss over and rush to this idea of, but there might be other possibilities down the road that you will love and they could be better. And, but there's so much honor. This is what I talk about in this chapter. There's so much honor in taking care of a family member, you know, linked. It's like, no, let us admit that it hurts, period. And then we hold the other pieces of, yes, there is beauty or there is honor in tending to your family. Yes, there is a sacredness to taking care of a body, your own perhaps, that has changed, and learning how to adapt and pivot with that. You know, it's got to be the both. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're diminishing.
Yeah. You say, grieve what you gave up, let the tears fall. And I thought this was a big sentence too. The dream died. This is what you're saying. The dream mm-hmm. died and it didn't come back for me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that happens. It falls. Like you said, it altogether fall out of the sky. Now, here you are. Time has passed and you are a writer
mm-hmm.
in a lot of different capacities, but the path went a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful chapter and a lot to think about. Edelweiss for your dreams.
On weekends, we're typically off on another adventure. Whether it's a scenic hike or a quaint town visit, I keep my Vessies with me because they effortlessly adapt to every twist and turn, ensuring comfort and style in our sometimes spontaneous escapades. Whether it's with the kids or just my husband and me, which is pretty rare, I love stepping into a great outdoor adventure with Vessies Storm Burst boots to capture the beauty of springtime landscapes. Their robust style is perfect for our nature excursions, adding a little dash of elegance to our outdoor explorations. The Vessi collection caters to every style. Whether you're dressing up for a night out or gearing up for a weekend hike, these shoes seamlessly blend into your wardrobe while offering the practicality of waterproof footwear. Ready to refresh your spring wardrobe? Vessi has you covered with footwear that fuses style with practicality. Head over to Vessi.com/outside to explore their versatile collection and automatically claim your 15% discount on your first order upon checkout. That's Vessi.com/outside for 15% off your first order.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky, wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking it.
And I thought it related a lot with the chapter about love. Daffodil for love. You lost the love that gave your life meaning. It isn't your fault that flowers fall. The love you gave but did not give back. The love you grieved but could not get over. I think a lot of people go through this.
Mm-hmm.
The words are so beautiful. I could just basically sit here and read your book. You say, I am sorry that your fences failed and that you could not keep the love you longed for. I am sorry that hearts break uneven, jagged little corners, cutting halfway through deflated lungs and cars and kids. But I am not sorry that you loved, not sorry that life came from your love, my life to be exact, because the loss hollowed a hole for you right here, a place in my heart, broke even forever for you, the both of you.
Yeah. And you know, that chapter in particular, that was such a hard one. That was about my parents, actually, that particular poem. And the whole chapter, I try to, chapter two, Daffodil for Love, I try to navigate the experience of growing up with parents who are divorced. And how do I share honestly and share the raw feelings that I felt in that season and the thoughts that I have about that? But how do I honor my parents and their own story, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what I tried to do essentially with this chapter and also the chapter on dreams is how do I distill this experience that for so many people can be so many different things and mean so many different things. Like, you know, why did you get divorced? Who got divorced? When did they get divorced? How, you know, it's just endless, the variations of which someone might connect with a topic like that, right?
Wow. Well, that's so interesting. Well, just because we don't ever go there, really.
We don't.
I don't think.
We don't.
We just say, oh, my parents got divorced when I was 12.
Yeah.
That's the sentence or whatever it is. My parents got divorced when I was 4. So that's super interesting, Rachel, because yeah, there's so much there and how much it impacts and the family dynamics and when it happened and why it happened and what led up to it and what happened after. But we don't ever talk about that.
Mm-hmm. We don't give space for that or allow people to name that. So I took it and distilled it down to the most, I tried to distill it down to the most universal sentiment that I could, which is you lost love, or you feel as though you've lost love because of someone else's lost love, which sounds like a mind trip, right? Like to say that. But when you think about it, you're grieving because of someone else's lost love. Or if you are the one that is experiencing separation, you're grieving lost love, right? So I had to find a way to distill that down and kind of speak from that place so that it was universal while I sought to share, you know, my personal story. And I did the same thing with the chapter about dreams. It's like, I talk about dreams the whole time, but then I eventually get into the desire under the dream. So if we've lost those dreams, how do we get back to what the desire was? And for me, you mentioned like I'm years out of that season, right? Like this is over a decade ago where I laid down this dream and I am a writer now and I am writing books and I am working in publishing and I am doing these things that I always wanted to do. And yet I do these things because I want to serve people well. I want to be a compassionate sojourner with others. I want to help them in their journeys and words. That's my way of doing that. I'm so thankful for the lessons that I learned in the season that I spent as my brother's caregiver, because being there in his need, oh my goodness, cultivated wells and wells of compassion. I would not be the writer that I am today had it not been for that season. And that is not to say that we have to go through hard things in order for good things to come. But again, it's that holding the both and. I recognize this was a hard choice, and yet look at what came because of tending to that. So,
yeah, your desire is still there.
Mm-hmm.
But you have shifted.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot. You said the also and the and. And that's what you meant by not sorry that life came from your love, my life to be exact.
Yes.
I'm sorry that your fences failed. And yeah, to have sorrow even for, because obviously divorce really affects the child. You're sorry for your parents.
Mm-hmm.
You could not keep the love you longed for. So daffodil for love. I think a lot of people are going to relate to so much of this. And I'm sure that as you already gotten feedback back, because you and I were supposed to talk before the book launched.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Life happens. And here we are after it's launched. So are you starting to get those stories where people say, I really relate, you know, to this chapter, and this one?
Yeah. And I'm so shocked too, because as you know, this book was extremely personal. It's very narrative driven. In fact, each chapter picks up from the next. So I literally go through the story of my life, using it as a resource. But I sought to use poetry, the flowers, all these different things to serve as universal language in hopes that it would translate from, oh, this is my story. Like, nope, I don't want, like, what is your story? How can you all enter in, you know, as reader? And so those messages are coming into my DMs, and I'm getting those emails of people sharing, you know, how each chapter has specifically spoken to them. And I'm honored. Like, I'm humbled. I reply and I say, I'm with you. Like, I'm walking it always, you know, and so I'm with you. I hear you. Yeah, it's such an honor.
Yeah. And there's so much in here. You're talking about friendship and home and innocence and aging and transition to motherhood. I mean, there's suicide, death, a lot, and mm-hmm. love and grace and remembrance. I really enjoyed, and I also got a little kick out of it. This part about friendship. And when I say I got a kick out of it, because it's sad, but your writing is so good. Mm-hmm. Your writing is so good. So you're talking about this critical period in your life when you had moved and you leave friends. So this is another big thing. I mean, I was just talking to someone recently, you know, she's a military wife. It's like you leave friends, and the world has changed because we can keep up with people a little bit better, but often it's really hard. And I think sometimes when a friend leaves, you've got this hole, and when you leave, you don't quite know how to keep up with everybody. And so you have this whole story about this transition from your 13th to your 14th birthday. And this was the line where I was like, what a writer. You say, my mailbox grows empty while my heart grows cold.
Mm.
How do we handle lost friendships?
Oh, gosh. Okay, I've got two things. I think the first is what you and I are doing right now is admitting that it is a loss. I think I went all through my teenage years grasping and trying to cling and hold on to these friendships, not knowing how to let them go. And I think it's because I didn't know I could let them go. I didn't know this is a loss that happens in life and it's okay to let go. And to talk about today's world where we have social media and it makes things easier in terms of holding on to people or keeping in touch, I actually think that complicates things.
Yeah.
Because then when you are in a moment or a season where it is time to move on or to let go, you have all of these apps and technologies available to you that almost give this facade of like, no, you can keep clinging to this. You can stay here. And that's just not true of life in terms of how we go in and out of seasons. And so I think the first thing is acknowledging that friendship loss is a loss. It's a big one. And then I think rituals help. I was actually just sharing this on a podcast interview last week that, you know, I share in that chapter, there are two things that I do. The first is I write letters to my friends, right? Like that's what that quote is saying. My mailbox grows empty while my heart grows cold. I was sending letters to my friends, trying to keep in touch, trying to keep that fire kindled. I think that writing, period, but maybe even writing letters is a nice ritual to have. Maybe that's a letter. I can't tell anyone what to do, but maybe you do keep in touch with those friends using, by way of letters. I think slow communication can offer just the opportunity for time and thought, right? Where we can really ponder what we want to say, how we want closure, or how we want to continue something. And then the other is, like, I think items are, I wish I had gotten into items, like things in this book. I really didn't. That should have been a chapter, because things matter when it comes to loss, like material items. So in that chapter on friendship, I talk about how, you know, it's my birthday, my friends come over, we walk down the street to go to this local gas station, we get our little fake candy cigarettes, and then, you know, all the nostalgia, by the way, in this chapter. Mm-hmm. And then we buy these Coca-Colas and vintage glass bottles. And when my friends go home after the party, I saved those bottles and I washed them out and I kept them in my closet for years, I think. And what I was sharing in a podcast episode later is what I think I was trying to do was, through those items, through those glass bottles, hold on to these friendships to keep them close. I do think items can be a really helpful part of moving through grief, working through grief. Maybe you've lost a friendship, but there's a particular item, a ring, an earring, a letter, a photograph that you can hang on to. We're humans, and we need those kinds of things. I think it's very easy to belittle material items, especially for maybe believers who, you know, we're supposed to have our eyes turned heavenly and have our thoughts on eternal matters. Well, we're still human. Mm-hmm. And so these things do have meaning and they do matter. So maybe that's helpful for someone.
Mm-hmm. And those little bottles, it's like, those are so cute to throw. You know, if you have something like that, you throw your flowers in there.
Yeah.
And then it's embodied.
Yeah.
It's something physical to help you remember. I also think, beyond that spiritual piece, I think just we're living in such an age of minimalism.
Yeah.
It's such a message, like, throw all your stuff out or give all your stuff away.
Yeah, that's so good, Jenny.
And I think there is something to be said about the sweet letters that you save. I liked what you said too, because you want to save it, because you said losing a friendship is like losing a part of ourselves. And it is the truth. Friendship matters because it matters to be seen, but you're losing a part of yourself. So to have those little things that just remind you of the love that was once there. The social media piece is tricky, because even from the standpoint of someone was just saying, it takes up so much of your time. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like you can't be as good of an embodied in-person friend anymore, mm-hmm. because so much of our time is spent managing these virtual relationships. And I love the idea of sending a letter and using your hand and writing something out and having longer thoughts than a DM.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give another idea. I also shared this recently, but one of my closest friends, my best friend, she, her parents moved out of her childhood home in the process of me writing this book. And I grieved that for her, because I know how that felt, especially having written about that in particular in this book. So I thought, I had to think really fast, because it was, the sale was going to happen. Everything was happening really fast. And I thought, oh no, I don't want her to have my experience where you come to realize you've lost this house and you have nothing to show for it, right? Mm. And so I did some thinking really quick, and then I made an order, and I, you know, sent her a voice message, and I said, you have a box or a package that's going to show up at your door. Be sure to check for it. What's inside is this. I sent her these glass frames where you can put pressed flowers. And I told her, here's what you have to do. Go to your parents' house before they close, you know, before they make that final sale. Go snip things from your garden. Her mom had a garden, you know, there were herbs all throughout. And I said, go snip what you can. Save it, preserve it, and then you have a piece of that forever. Those are the kinds of things that we can do. She can't keep that house. She couldn't hold on to that house. But what is a small way that you can still hold on to that, and it just keeps you connected, and it means so much, you know, so little, but it means so much.
It is. It's so little, but it connects you to those feelings of love and all of those memories that you have. So I agree. The physical items, they can do a lot for you. Even, and you're talking about physical things. You said you started lighting a candle every time you lose something, a little grief ritual. You're talking about that's in the chapter of Daisies for Innocence. So tell us what you do there with a candle.
Candles mean so much to me. I get really fidgety and antsy if I don't have a candle to light. It just, I need them for my days to function well and to feel grounded. That was something I started doing when we were all in the height of COVID. You couldn't really go anywhere. We lost vigils. We lost funerals. And I think we all struggled with that feeling of helplessness. Like, what can I do? What can I physically do? How do I alleviate all of this suffering, right? And to be faced with the reality, like, that there's not much that you can do other than stay home. And, you know, we walk through this and wait through this and pray through this. So I started lighting candles as a way to do something, even when I felt like I didn't know what to do, even when I didn't know what to say. Lighting a candle and letting that be my lament, letting that be my action of like, I see this, I honor this, or I grieve this, really just anything. So it is something that I still do. And again, this, you know, I shared this last week, not too long ago, but I also, there's a comforting presence that I personally feel from candles. I think it's because of the movement, like flames just, they dance, you know? And so I personally feel a sense of presence when I light candles. And to me, that helps me in my moments of suffering when I feel like I need to be alleviated from whatever burden it is that I'm carrying, you know, to be reminded that I'm not alone in this. So
it was good. It is really interesting. I mean, I don't ever sit and think about a candle. However, you know, it's got a scent. I loved when they started to make those ones that the wick was like, looked like a little piece of wood.
Yeah.
And it would crackle.
Yeah. And they make
like a fire.
Yeah, like a fire.
And so you've got all of those sensory things happening. I mean, this is the point, right? We're talking about physical things and we're living in such a virtual world that these physical things, and maybe even more so now than used to be, really can grab our attention and help us in these hard situations because so much of our life is not that way. I mean, I think 50 years ago, no one would talk about how writing a letter was a powerful experience, but now it is.
Yeah,
it is. It's different. And getting something in your mailbox, it's just in your actual physical mailbox. Lighting a candle, you say, small sacraments make meaning out of the mystery. And I think it's all of these ideas are so important for a time when we're so wrapped up in things that are not real. So that was in Daisy for Innocence. It was just so neat with all the flowers.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. you get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
I had actually never heard the word matrescence.
Matrescence, yeah.
Matrescence. Baby's breath for matrescence. This is that both sides, right? It's like it's so beautiful to become a mother. You go from being a woman to a mother. But also, this is the sentence. Motherhood makes a muddied mess of you, unties all the perfectly placed pieces that once held your life together from the center.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of stays that way. Like I kind of thought this is going to come back together. You know, like at some point, these kids are going to be, and it does it. It really does not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us about the baby's breath.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, it's everything that you were saying earlier when we first started this conversation, this idea of like, wow, even in motherhood, there's loss, those daily losses of those might be expectations that you have for yourself or for your kids. Maybe it's a certain career path that you had to lay down or make adjustments in terms of, and then that therefore impacts your finances. And so there's, you know, a litany of losses that comes with that. Your body changes, you know, and I talk about this a little bit, but this myth of bouncing back, what is that and why? Let's admit that our bodies have changed. And what does that mean? How do we ponder that, the fact that our bodies have changed, they've enlarged, they've swelled? How does that mirror our hearts and the way that our hearts have swelled and have increased in space and size? And what does that mean for our minds and the way that our children take up space, which so precious, we love them taking up space. But again, there are losses that come with that. That might impact your career or your day-to-day. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so, I can't remember how I stumbled upon wanting to write about that. I knew that even though this isn't part of my story, though it is one of my greatest fears, I knew I wanted and had to talk about loss of child. And I knew I had to touch on that because that is a disenfranchised loss still. I know so many women still don't know how to enter into that conversation. And
you even had a word for it.
Yeah.
Viloma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Viloma. I never actually heard that. And it means against the natural order, losing a child. As everyone always says, there is no word for it. You know, there's a word for widow or widower.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Or orphan.
Yes, or orphan, but nothing about when you lose your child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew if I talked about that I also would have to talk about motherhood in some shape or form and the losses that are felt there and try to, and this is the thing about, you know, that I base this book out of my story. And so my story can only encompass so much. I don't know what it means to be an adoptive mother. I don't know what it means to be a foster mother. But I knew I had to try my best to be as universal as possible and also explore that there are losses that they look so different. They come in so many different shapes and sizes. And so for a mother who has given birth, she might experience change in the way that her body is, and she might count that as a loss. Well, what does that look like for a mother who is an adoptive mother? And she's welcoming children into her home. You know what I mean? And I also, I have to thank my beta readers because I really leaned heavily on them to say, hey, this book goes off of the outline of my story, but what am I missing here? What is your story? And how can I touch and tap into the other griefs that I don't know about, you know?
Yes.
And so kudos to my beta readers for helping me out with these two chapters and a few others in terms of like, hey, if you expanded here, this would also make space for some of us in this camp that don't really get to talk about these things, you know?
It's a great one. Because then you talk about a reading group guide, and it works so well with that because, like you say, anyone can join in with it. Mm. And I love that at the end. There are these extra little things, resources for reflection, and the reading group guide, which has all of these different questions in here. What's interesting, actually, Rachel, is I got an advanced copy, and then this is the final copy. So there's a little bit of extra stuff in here from when I first took my notes. But it's really beautiful. There's a list of probably 20 questions that if you wanted to have a little book club, which I love book clubs. Mm-hmm. I think in an age of disconnection, book clubs are fantastic.
Yeah.
My mom has been in a book club for like 15 years, the same one. And they keep a little journal, the books they do once a month. But the matter of little losses, finding grace to grieve the big and small things, it's just so applicable for so many of us, all of us, really. So this list of 20 questions, and, you know, some of them are 20-ish questions. Some of them are lighter and some of them are a little heavier. But, you know, mm-hmm. who is the first friend you made? And why is this friend special or significant to you? And then you talk about what is the hardest loss or situation you've ever survived? What is the hardest loss or situation you've ever seen someone else survive? So there's this mix of heavier ones and lighter ones, and it would be a phenomenal way of getting to know some other people. So that's right in the book. It comes with the reading group guide. And also the for further reading was really substantial. Mm-hmm. There's 3 to 4 books, 5 books even, in all of these different categories. Grief books, spiritual growth, funeral books, creativity books. And you have Ashley Gads in there. I liked hers. Actually, mm-hmm. it's always fun when you go through this and you're like, oh, I've read this one, or I've talked to that person. There was a lot that I hadn't read either. And so that's always good too, because I was like, oh, I could check these different ones out. But creativity books, fiction, so some of your favorite fiction in here, children's books, journaling books, which that's a big deal because, once again, another embodied experience where you're writing and getting your thoughts out, companion books, memoirs. Ooh, memoirs are so good. I've just decided I love memoirs. So there's, I mean, probably 50 books right there that mm-hmm. you could take these topics and wherever you're at with it and whichever chapters really speak to you, there's a bigger, deeper dive that you could do with it. And
yeah.
I think that's such a gift to a reader who is maybe, you know, they're looking for more for like this particular thing. And obviously those are the ones that impacted you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such a beautiful book, Rachel. Just different and similar, both different and similar from Let There Be Art.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was drawn in from the beginning just because of the title, and also just it's a gorgeous book. One of the poems that I had, we did this last time, we read a poem. Poem intertwined. Here's a problem, Rachel. I'm going to tell you a problem. I made these notes a month ago.
I love your notes. I always love your notes, Jenny.
But you know what? This is actually something I'm learning like right now. I'm like, if I made them a month ago, I have to review before I pop on a little bit, right? Because I'm like, oh, wait, like what? I have this like things are bolded. I'm like, but I don't even know what that means anymore. But you know what is neat, though? I read the book over a month ago, and I think some books don't stick with you and some books do. And this one does, I think, especially because of these flower metaphors, because I've never seen that before. And there were so many different ones that you tied in. We have time for one more. Do you want to pick?
Yeah. How about
I'm hoping you pick the one I want you to pick.
Do you want me to do the poem of dedication? That's in the very, very beginning.
Yes, I have that. Yes, yeah. That would be beautiful. That would be beautiful, beautiful.
This one is a poem of dedication to the readers. And it also kind of correlates with the cover, which on the cover, not many people know this. There wasn't really space for me to like tell the story about the cover, but there are columbine on the cover. Those are columbine. And there's lots of different meanings for columbine, but one of them is like foolishness or like, foolishness. And so this idea of like, yes, grief is hard, grief is heavy, but also like there's this level of resilience that is cultivated, and that is what makes a fool of death. That our resilience in light of grief makes a fool of these losses that we experience. So I try to be like really sassy mm-hmm. secretly in some of my poems, but I'll read this poem of dedication. Here. A flower for every little way your faith fractured, for every dream that died unseen, for every friendship failed and fallen, for every grief held in another's disbelief, for you, a page, a place to pour out pain. Here's Columbine, for you and you. Watch the way it bends and moves. It dances, delicate, though it's drowned. It holds like hope. It lifts its head. Resilience makes a fool of death.
Oh, Rachel, I'm so glad I know.
I'm glad I know you.
This has been such a gift for me because I was like a math teacher. Completely on the other end of the spectrum of life. And your books really have touched me. And like I said, I mean, like I feel teary. I read these different things and they're so meaningful. And I just, in my own life, I don't really think that way. And so I have loved how your books and your presence and the things that you say and the things that you write have opened up a lot for me and a lot for me to think about too. That's deep and very meaningful because this is the things that we all are going through. And I always think it's impressive when an author can do that, when you can write a book that so many different people read in so many different stages of life and they relate to these stories and they draw them in because everyone has had dreams that die.
Yeah.
And they want to know that their dreams still matter and that type of thing. So Rachel, what a gift. What a gift to talk to you for a second time.
Thanks, Jenny.
It's just such a treat. The Matter of Little Losses, Finding Grace to Grieve the Big and Small Things. It's out. It's already out. And you can join in on the conversation. People are already talking about it, which that's actually a really special thing to you. Often I record ahead of time, but this one's already out. And so the conversation is already up and going. And people can find this one. And also, they're both fantastic, especially for moms, I think. Let There Be Art. They both expanded me. That's how I feel about your writing. I felt expanded. Oh, I read it and was like, oh, like I'm kind of too black and white and boring. You know, not that. No, you know.
No, I love that. Yeah.
You know, I just felt like it expanded. Like, oh, there's more out there than really I'm realizing. And I think as the summer comes and I see the flowers, I will think back about this book quite a bit. So.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jenny.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.